righty, we are set and ready to roll. Jed, let me just confirm that you're there for us.
I am.
Beautiful. To all of you, we are delighted that you are here for the Media Bids Power Hour. This is an educational program that we have done for advertising sales professionals going all the way back to 1995. We love helping you think and helping you grow and giving you tools and resources and unbelievable strategies that will help you in the selling of your advertising. Today we have a fantastic program that we're going to be talking about native advertising. What does it mean? What are the issues? There are three key points that we're going to be talking about. This has become a really big emerging issue. We want you to be on the cusp of it. We want you to understand it. We want you to understand the pros and cons. And then we also want to be certain that you understand how it fits with in your advertising publication or e-newsletter or website or all three or not, but at least understand what it means if advertisers are talking about it. We do encourage you to find a quiet spot and see if you can close your office door, turn off as much technology as you can, and really be able to focus on the key points we're going to share. It's not an accident that there's nothing on your screen. We don't want you multitasking or many-tasking. We want to keep it bone simple. Print off the three key points. The more notes you make, the more that we're going to infuse the knowledge that Jed's going to be sharing with you, and that's really the coach approach. That's our belief about the way that we help leaders win is that we infuse the knowledge becomes yours, and the more notes that you're taking, the more that you will succeed as well. As always, also, just send a quick, if you have any questions during the course of the program, send a quick email to Ernest@powerhour.com, or just simply hit reply to the confirmation, and our team will work and weave those in. Jed, some opening words. It is always a pleasure. We've done this for a long, long time. Say a few words, if you would, before you get into the program about Media Bids, what's cooking. I'll say a few words about Power Hour, and then we're going to dive right in, okay?
Great. Well, first of all, thanks to Ernest. He does a great job with these teleseminars, always adds a lot of valuable information. So, we really couldn't do it without him. So thanks to Ernest. Thanks to all of you for joining us. We got some great questions ahead of time, and I think this is a timely topic. There's been a lot about native advertising in the news. What MediaBids does in general is we help drive revenue to publications for their print editions primarily, but also for online as well. We have a variety of different ways that we do that. We've been around for about 13 years. There's about 10,000 publications that are registered on our site, almost 20,000 advertisers. And we, you know, what we do is we essentially connect advertisers with publications. And we've been able to drive a lot of revenue to print publications that has really come from advertisers that have sort of forgotten about print. We have a variety of different ways that we do that, but the bottom line to you as a publication representative is that we're really focused on driving revenue to print publications. So if you'd like to learn more, or if you're currently registered and would like to learn more, would just like to talk more about how you can further use us, we'd love to talk to you. We're almost always here, and our contact information will be in the follow-up email.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Jed, it's always a pleasure. Jed and his team sort of work in what I call the old-fashioned way. When they say they're going to do it, they do it. They know exactly how to drive revenue for you and drive advertising dollars. When you also work with them and you work with their advertisers, it gives even more credibility. One of those reoccurring questions, Jed, we're constantly asked, how do I get regional advertisers? How do I get national advertisers? Guess what? Work with Media Bids. You'll have those. Then you can use those to piggyback and parlay other stories and other opportunities to get other advertisers. It's really, really positive. Jed, as you know, my name is Ernest Orienti. My company is Power Hour. Our website is powerhour.com. I've been in advertising sales since the mid-80s, our 30th year in and around, have a deep, deep passion. Every day I get up, put my shoes on, and go, I love what I do, and I love the world of advertising. For the last 18 years, the opportunity to work with more than 2,000 publications, publishers, ad sales teams, e-newsletters, today website ads, all of those in 11 time zones around the world, working by phone and conference call and so forth. We have a very large LinkedIn group about advertising sales success. We encourage you to join that, and really the flagship of what we do is every Tuesday we have an advertising sales Academy. It's live. It's open mic, different than this. This is closed mic. Open mic means we're all there together, and we have a topic every single week that will help you win. Come into our Power Hour site. Come join us every single week. It's open mic. Field your questions. And every Thursday, you get a little audio file that will help you with a specific selling strategy tied to ad sales. Jed, we've got a lot of ground to cover about native advertising. Let's roll. What does it mean? What are the issues? Let's open up. I mean, Jeff Bezos kicks off and says, hey, I think I'm going to buy the Washington Post. I got a little spare change floating around.
Right.
And we're going, Bezos, I thought you knew something about books and shipping right. stuff and warehousing. What are you doing in the Washington Post space? But, hey, he rolls out, that he's proposing, native print ads, right? And then all, right behind that comes what? The New York Times. I mean, whoa. I mean, there's a lot going on. And then we have others saying, hey, this is really getting a dangerous idea for publications, ad sources, ad mediums, websites. Hey, we're going down a slippery slope. So why don't we kick that off? And I know, Jed, anytime that you sort of showcase your knowledge and the prep and the planning you do, I always look forward to it. So let's dive in on point number one.
Okay, so as you mentioned, I mean, let's just sort of agree on a definition, because there's a lot of information floating around about native advertising, and I think that if you read 10 different articles, you probably get 10 slightly different definitions. But as we're defining it here, native advertising is really content that's being used to engage consumers, and the hope is that that engagement will lead to purchases. Another term that's very often used is content marketing, and it basically means the same thing as native advertising. The advertiser is giving information or some degree of entertaining, entertainment in exchange for the consumer's attention and hopefully that consumer's purchases. And as you mentioned, this has really become a hot topic. When Jeff Bezos bought the Washington Post, one of the first things that he proposed was beginning to run native advertising in print. Here's just a couple sentences from the Ad Age magazine article, which came out at that time. Jeff Bezos is pitching advertisers on native advertising to run in print. The ad units on offer include one the Post calls an agenda setter, wrapped around a portion of the front page and featuring both display advertising and copy resembling editorial content. Another execution sits among true editorial content on the fold inside the paper. The native ads in print, which will be marked sponsor-generated content, extend the Brand Connect program that has let advertisers post edit-like stories online. It had been around for a while, and there were certainly other publications that had started doing it before the Washington Post, but that sort of brought it to the forefront. On the flip side, there's publications like the Wall Street Journal, which think it's just an absolutely horrible idea. Here's what one editor from the Wall Street Journal said. An advertiser who wants to advertise in the Wall Street Journal to be seen and to be associated with a brand like the Wall Street Journal or the Financial Times or Bloomberg or any publication like that, because those news organizations are respected. If advertisers manipulate the digital or print operations of those news organizations, it makes the reader confused as to what is news and what is advertising. And the readers trust the very reason those advertisers want to advertise in those news organizations goes away. So there's a big, there's a lot of varying opinions about this. I thought when talking about native advertising, it would sort of be helpful to kind of discuss for a couple minutes how we sort of got to this place where native advertising is all of a sudden kind of a hot topic in print, but also in other mediums.
And Jed, let me just pause here as you're sharing these stories, and for those of you that are listening, You know, so we want you to stay what? On the leading edge of what's happening in our space. And frankly, the term native advertising, Jed, I don't think I've used that in a sentence, you know, for a good portion of my lifetime. I was kidding with you before we got started, thinking about what native tan, wasn't that like one of the copper tone brands or one of those,
right.
You know, one of the big billboards. I've never used the word, you know, native in a sentence. And all of a sudden it emerges, it kind of sticks out there. You go, huh? Content Martin, yes. Native, no, and it's because it's become so much more visible. Let's all be clear, though, that based on the research done by eMarketing, you know, 2012, about 1.6 billion in this space of content marketing, native marketing. 2013, they're projecting 2.85 billion, round numbers, 3 billion. So, you know, this is really not going away. It's sort of here, and we just want to both navigate it, have all of you understand it. Does it apply for you? Do you understand pros and cons, you know, and then how do you handle this when advertisers are speaking with you and speaking to you and so forth in your presentation? So, Jed, I just wanted to frame that a little bit before we sort of go into the next point. It's sort of a big deal, right?
Right, and what a lot of people in print will say, you know, sort of justifiably is, you know, isn't this the same thing as an advertorial? You know, in a lot of ways it is, you know, although people in, you know, people who are really doing it now would sort of argue with that, and we'll get into some of the ways that it's different. But in a large respect, you know, it's the same. You know, they're certainly cousins of one another. So it's not, you know, it's not that foreign a concept. It's just sort of being, you know, the applications are a little different.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So let's talk about a little bit about how we got here. And some of the, you know, sort of backdrop. Let's go down the path of consumer behavior and start there, okay?
Right. So, you know, marketing really used to be primarily about disruption. You know, there were, you know, disruptive advertising is advertising that gets in the way of content. You know, you're watching a show on television and a commercial comes on, and you know, before we all had DVRs, right, we used to, you know, we used to sit there and watch it because we wanted to make sure that we saw the rest of the show on the other end of the commercial. Disruptive advertising is really it remains the dominant form of advertising on, you know, on TV, commercial radio, even the internet, and in magazines and newspapers. You know, few readers in magazines and newspapers see an ad in print and really focus on it. You know, the hope for most print ads is that they get response because they sort of get in a reader's way, right? You know, a reader is reading an article and they go to a jump page and they see an ad. You know, the readers are really engaged with the publication, though, because of the content. That's what they want, and the hope is that the ad, something about the ad, will stick out and convince them to investigate that product or service further. And print ads are really designed for this. I mean, most conventional print ads are really designed with this in mind, right? You know, they have big headlines. You know, not much text. You know, a compelling call to action. These ads assume that the reader doesn't want to spend more than, you know, a few seconds really reading the ad and determining whether that product or service is something that they want. The problem that has come about, you know, for a lot of marketing people is that disruptive advertising, you know, in all mediums, is becoming just more and more of a problem. It's become less productive. You know, consumers are increasingly blind to disruptive advertising. You know, there's DVRs for TV, there's Netflix, YouTube, satellite radio, Pandora. You know, there's other streaming radio options. You know, there's apps for just about everything I mentioned and beyond. All these tools are really just, you know, are really popular in large part because they help consumers, you know, essentially avoid advertising. You know, obviously there's a big content component to it, and people are you know, want to access the content that they provide, but they eliminate this sort of disruptive advertising that is, you know, traditionally been been the main breadwinner for all of the for all of these mediums. You know, banner ads, which are, you know, really probably the internet's most common form of disruptive advertising, are, you know, are another, you know, are another example where, you know, it's become very, very difficult to get a large number of consumers to click on banner ads. I mean, we see that with the banner ads that we run. Advertisers we speak to find the same thing, and the response rates on banner ads are just almost unmeasurable. Mm-hmm. There are probably more mistakes than made for banner ads than there are intentional clicks.
And if I can just insert, you know, sort of the last time I clicked on a pay-per-click ad, you know, when doing a Google search, I can't remember. 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, we spend all day long having a search engine team working with clients on their website and their search visibility. I can't remember ever clicking on a pay-per-click. Why? Because the algorithms, I'm there to find what I need, get me, use the algorithms of Google, and get me to where I need to go. Same if I'm on Facebook. I've been on LinkedIn since one of the first 500 users, Jed, going back 10 years ago. I've never clicked on a pay-per-click. But can I tell you, I'm reading Wired magazine last night, dog-earing pages and making notes and tearing off. Why? Because I'm reading it. I'm more relaxed. I'm looking at the ads. I mean, there's this whole sense of that's probably the best description of, you know, anti-disruptive, because when I'm reading and I'm really enjoying and I'm in Wired magazine and I'm learning about and I'm apt and I am taking more action because I'm engaging differently. You follow me on that?
Yeah, no, and I think that, you know, what you're speaking to really is sort of the you know, one of the basic tenets of native advertising, right? The idea that, you know, if presented properly, you know, you're more likely to respond to an advertiser's message. You know, if it's not something that's, you know, that's annoying you and getting in your way, and you're actually, you know, in a context where you're interested in it, then you're more likely to react.
Positively, and I'll often say, you know, when our sales team say, well, I don't know, you know, I got advertisers buying radio and they love radio, and I just say, let me just pause. When was the last time you pulled over on the side of the road as you were listening to a commercial and wrote down a phone number or a website? And there's always this long pause. They go, I haven't. I don't. Okay, good. The radio serves a purpose, but it's not driving the kinds of numbers and the kinds of ad results like your advertising in your print publications. And of course, we know the impact of e-newsletters and websites are not as impactful, but we realize that advertisers want to talk about that bundle of all three. But let's be clear, Jed has given entire programs on the power of print and the results that you get from print. And quite honestly, it's eye-popping, the differences. We encourage you to come into the MediaBits site and go look for the presentations that you've given on that, because the data and the stats and the numbers are unbelievable for the value of print ads and print advertising. So, Jed, back to you. Where to next as we go back and sort of reflect back on, you know, maybe some of the surveys or studies and research related to some of that?
Yeah, so you know, it's really, you know, I haven't seen any surveys or studies which sort of talk about, you know, consumers' ability to use technology to avoid disruptive advertisers in other mediums, like the internet and like television and radio, and how that applies to print. You know, my guess is that there are a lot of readers like you, Ernest, who are sort of engrossed in the publication and therefore are more likely to, you know, to respond to the ads and to really take them in. But I bet you that there's also, you know, a significant number of readers who, you know, due to their training primarily in other mediums, you know, have become even better at avoiding print ads, right? Because they see all ads as an intrusion. They see ads as something which don't really apply to them, right? They're because in the rest of their life they've been able to avoid them, you know, to use technologies that essentially weed them out. So this is really what sort of brought about this kind of resurgence in native advertising is, you know, primarily the internet's dilemma of how do we get internet users, how do we get people who visit web pages to actually interact with us, to interact with advertisers, and how can we get advertisers, you know, to pay for that interaction? Because banner ads aren't working, and there's, you know, and all the different sort of iterations of those banner ads aren't working. Search ads are a little different, and we could talk about those later. But banner ads are you know sort of the main nut that marketers are trying to crack. So the idea is to try to engage the consumer, you know, and if we can engage the consumer, you know, they're more likely to take an action. They're more likely to respond, to click or pick up the phone or go to a restaurant, whatever it may be. For many advertisers, you know, in order to engage the consumer, they need to tell some sort of story. They need to do more than just say, you know, we're selling a product at this price. The idea is to not just tell the consumers why they should buy something, but to engage them and explain the story behind the product, what makes the product different and unique, and why they need the product or service being advertised. You know, that the company that's doing the advertising is a company that people can trust, that people, it's a company that people should sort of align themselves with and feel good about. So by telling the story, advertisers are trying to earn the consumer's trust, you know, and business, which is not, you know, a completely different goal than is being attempted in traditional advertising. But the difference is that in traditional advertising, you know, it's the idea is that, you know, you're hitting a consumer with one or two facts that is going to grab their attention, and that's what they're going to remember. You know, with native advertising, it's much more of a strategy of sort of trying to explain all of the backstory, the idea being that, you know, the 10% off I'm willing to offer a consumer today is less important than a consumer feeling good about the company and thinking of us as an expert in the field. And it's really a strategy that an increasing number of advertisers are adopting. I mean, Ernest alluded to some of the figures earlier, but according to a survey by Content Marketing Institute, 57% of businesses that are focused on consumers plan on increasing or significantly increasing their native advertising spending, you know, over the next year. The same group also did a study and found that 39% of marketing communication budgets are spent on native advertising. So that means, you know, really the PR side of things. And, you know, and it's growing quickly. You know, it's grown, you know, it's almost doubled the amount spent over the last year. You know, the definition of native advertising is a little soft right now, so it's kind of, you know, different organizations come out with different figures, but, you know, according to the Custom Content Council, which sounds like they're pretty focused on native advertising, they're estimating that in 2012 about $44 billion was spent. Now again, some of that comes out, you know, comes down to how they defined it, but the point is that, you know, it's grown substantially, and it's certainly something that a lot more marketers are focused on.
So Jed, just to pause here, and for those of you as you're listening, if there are questions you'd like us to work and weave in, we have a number of questions that we're going to be feeding in that already came in prior to the live program. But as you're listening to Jed, if there are questions you'd like to tuck in at any point, just send an email to ernest@powerhour.com, or just simply hit a reply to the confirmation that brought you here, and we'll filter all those in. We already can see there's a lot of questions that are already here, and we'll field them either now, weave them in here, they've already been asked, or we'll follow up afterward. It doesn't matter, we're positively going to serve you. So, Jed, if we could, let and I know there's an upcoming question from Brett that we're going to weave in Florida. So, you know, despite all the attention this form of marketing is getting, the idea of products telling a story is really nothing new, right? Take us back in time just a little bit related to that.
Right. So, you know, there's some pretty interesting examples from the history of print. The Michelin Guide, you know, sort of the famous, you know, Michelin Guide was started in the 1930s to help Michelin tires, try to sell more tires. You know, they gave out automotive tips and tips on, you know, tires, which tires should be used for which cars. Soap operas, you know, are another example. This is on TV, but soap operas are named soap operas because Procter & Gamble sponsored them all, and they used them as a way to highlight their household items, you know, such as soap. John Deere started what may have been the first example of native advertising ever in 1895. They started a magazine called The Furrow, which gave tips on farming and crops and machinery. And Brett from Florida asked if native advertising can be applied to B2B, and you know the answer is, you know, absolutely. And that, you know, it may not be the most relevant example today, but you know it's interesting that the first example of native advertising is really a B2B example. You know, there's many examples, and advertorials in print are probably, you know, what everyone is used to and the most common sort of type of native advertising. You know, we'll talk more about some of the differences there, but you know, there are, you know, going back, you know, 50 years, that was a standard form of advertising.
And let me just pause here, Brett. We're hoping that answers your question. If not, send us an email and we'll tuck in a follow-up question. And just a quick comment, Jed, about B2B in general, marketing and advertising. One of the most important principles, we've taught this for a long time in our private work and also in our sales academy, and that is B2B wants to be educated. They want information. So if it's coming from your advertising sales group in your company, always stay on the side of education as you're educating your advertisers and as you're educating your prospective advertisers. Let the bees come to your honey in the way that you share content, share trends, do white papers, conduct surveys. Always remember, you're like Switzerland. You're able to go out into your space on that B2B side, bring in the information, you know, and then send it back out in a way that makes sense, preserves confidentiality, and is invaluable. It's one of the ways to position yourself as a thought leader. And, Jed, in the examples that you gave, for example, the Michelin Guide, well, how beautiful. And, frankly, when you said that and shared that, you rang my bell. I'm going, Michelin Guide, isn't that funny? I've always walked around going, where's the Michelin Guide? And you know it relates to the tires, but you forget that it was an advertising and marketing opportunity for them in the early days of vehicles back in the 1830s. So,
I mean, it's a great example, right? Of you know, of a company that, you know, probably knew more about tires than anyone else in the world, and you know, and rather than just, you know, tell people that in a you know, in an ad, they, you know, they shared it with them. You know, and it worked out pretty well.
Well, and just down that path, I'll just share a quick example. So I get stacks and stacks and stacks of print catalogs. Now, I think we all know how those work, and especially this time of year, right? They start to load up. I can't remember the last time I flipped through any of them, right? It was a period of my time where I maybe wanted more, or was more intriguing, and now it's just such an onslaught of, but the one that I pull out, listen to this, my Patagonia one. Why? Because about a third of the pages are stories about adventure, people climbing, people kayaking, scaling large mountains, and I'm finding myself, I'm engaged. And guess what? I turn those pages, I look at the images, I look to see the names of the people they're featuring, I tear pages, and I go through that catalog almost like it's a mini version of my Wired magazine. I'm going, you know, let me see. You know, and there's always a story in there about the environment and doing good and green and ways to be involved. And inevitably, I'm pulling out, I'm making notes, I go back to the web to read, and guess what else? I'm buying clothing. Wink, wink, because
right.
You engaged me.
Right, and the people at Patagonia might be exactly the same as the people at, you know, REI or something, right? But but the bottom line is because of that, because they're able to communicate that to you, you feel better about the company, right? You have a different attitude about their products and what they're selling, and you know, so you're more likely to actually spend money with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. So consumer attitude has changed. You know, we talked about some examples. The other thing that's really changed that sort of brought us where we are today is sort of all of the distribution options that are available for for both consumers and marketers. You know, it's not uncommon right now for, you know, an ad that appears in print to reference a website, which leads someone to a, you know, a YouTube video or a Twitter account or a Facebook page. I mean, it's, so it's really, you know, the you know, marketers are, you know, are trying to, you know, sort of, you know, package all of these things together to create sort of an experience for the consumer. And, you know, the numbers bear that out. The companies who focus on native advertising use many different channels to reach consumers. The Content Marketing Institute did a study, and they said that about 42% of the content marketing companies that they interviewed used print magazines for native advertising. About 37% they said they used print newsletters. 29% said they used digital versions of magazines. The highest percentage, the highest medium used was social media, which really sort of lends itself to it very well. 84% used social media. And sort of surprisingly, tied with social media was 84% said that they routinely use the method of putting articles that they've written on other websites. So that's you know, I know that's also sort of a search engine trick, but it's you know, clearly something that that has you know, become widespread. So you know, so that's sort of what has kind of, you know, in a short amount of time, what has sort of, you know, brought us to where we are today, and why native advertising is probably more compelling to some marketers today than it was 5 or 10 years ago. Mm-hmm.
Just to insert, if we could just pause. And so what we're really saying here is what? It takes a lot of work to get above the noise.
Right, and there's just a lot more noise, right? And consumers are expecting to be spoken to in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the thought.
And then let's go the other way. The power of the pen is mightier than the sword, right? Today, because you get on you go and have a bad meal at Paco's Tacos, and you go on to Yelp, and you blast that Paco's Tacos. That's more than a keystroke, right? Out to the world, out to the search engines. And then when you go to do a search for, you know, tacos in your area, and up come the reviews of taco shops, up comes the -5, you know, ratings for Paco's Tacos. It's really become a bit dicey. The world of advertising, we wish we could say to all of you, wave the magic wand, that it's the world of ad sales is easy. It is tougher. For those of us that have been around, you know, more than, you know, really 10 years, in my case, Jed's case, you start to push 15, 20, 30 years, you look back, in those days it was simple. A little direct mail, you had Yellow Pages, you had your newspaper. That was about it. Then you started to have publications, and then you started to have niched publications, a little tighter to that, instead of just general, like your life or your time. And now you have today just an explosion, a rainbow. So we as advertising sales leaders have to know exactly our audience, exactly what we do well, exactly what sets ourselves apart, exactly how we help our advertisers get above the noise, exactly how we can show the advertisers exactly what they're getting in terms of response. And then at the same time, we have to be equally prepared and rapidly prepared to talk about who we're competing with and explain the differences of what you do versus what they do, and where you have an advantage, so you're part of that media mix. So what Jed is sharing is this piece about native advertising is one more sort of, you know, tool on the tool belt for companies. We need to know how it works. We need to know how it works for you, if it does, the pros or the cons if it doesn't, and you need to be fluid in the way that you're talking to the advertisers related to it. So, Jed, let's go down the path. Native advertising, what exactly is it? How does it work? Let's go down.
Right, and this is really how it relates to print, obviously, mm-hmm. most specifically. I tried to focus on that, you know, primarily. You know, native advertising, just keep in mind, has exactly the same goal as any other form of advertising, right, to get people ultimately to buy something. It's just different in that it uses content to engage customers, and the hope is that that engagement will lead to purchases. you know, some pretty interesting examples are Forbes Brand Voice. And for any of you sort of, you know, interested in this topic, you know, that's really a great place to look because they do a really good job, and they've been very successful at it. It's a blog-type format where advertisers can relay information to Forbes readers, oftentimes not explicitly about their products, but more about the industry that they're in. Obviously, it fits well with Forbes because it's a business publication, but, you know, you can imagine some applications in a local or regional level even. Forbes estimates that about 20% of its total advertising revenue in 2013 will be generated by brand voice. And they project that about 30% of their total advertising revenue will be generated by brand voice in 2014. So it's a pretty simple idea, and it's something which has made a big revenue difference to Forbes. The advertisers like it. You know, I pulled out this quote from a Forbes brand voice advertiser just because I can imagine it making a lot of people on the line absolutely cringe, but I think it gives a good insight into how advertisers are thinking about this form of advertising. This is from an advertiser that's using brand voice. When we first set out to become thought leaders, we knew we had to create original yet authentic content that not only catered to business audiences, but also met them where they received their news. Naturally, Forbes.com was an ideal destination, said Julie Parrish, CMO of NetApp. With Brand Voice, we're able to reach the right audience, create insightful content, and position NetApp as a thought leader in our industry. In fact, we recently won a marketing award for our content, which is a true testament to how sponsored news, when authentic and delivered via a product such as Brand Voice, is changing the industry. So, you know, that just sort of gives you some idea into how some advertisers, you know, would view it. So Forbes has, you know, but to their credit, you know, whether you ultimately think this is right or wrong for your publication, you know, Forbes has created a pretty significant revenue stream by giving their advertisers another paid vehicle to communicate with their readers. And if you think about it from the viewpoint of the advertisers, you know, they are in many cases an industry leader in their business or their field, and so communicating with readers about that industry, you know, makes some sense. You know, closer to home, one of our customers is Pro Flowers. This is another example, and they know an enormous amount about flowers. They worry probably more than almost anyone else on earth about how to keep cut flowers fresh and looking good, mm-hmm. which is, you know, something that, you know, they've got teams of scientists working on. So obviously, you know, their agenda is to sell as many flowers as they possibly can. But by sharing some of their knowledge and what they've learned, they can demonstrate to customers that they're more than just an inexpensive way to buy flowers, right? They want to portray themselves as being flower experts, which, you know, in fact they are. And so they've really tried to do this in two ways. First, in the form of sort of a long-form advertorial, in much the same way that we talked about earlier, you know, 1,000 words or more, you know, describing what they know about how to care for cut flowers, regardless of where they've been purchased. And, oh, by the way, you know, Pro Flowers is a great place to purchase them. And they've also gone down the road of more, you know, of what we would describe here today as more native advertising, in the form of articles in which they wrote about flower care and, in some case, paid for placements. Where they were distributed either, you know, and you know, they would pay for placements either in print publications or online publications, you know, in advance of Mother's Day. You know, the idea being that, you know, here's how, you know, here's how your mom can care for the cut flowers, which she's inevitably going to receive on Mother's Day, written by the experts in cut flowers, pro flowers. You know, another example from our sort of group of clients is Omaha Steaks, and what they do periodically, you know, especially in the summer months, is their print ads will give tips on grilling, you know, or they'll offer to give away, you know, a free pamphlet on, you know, on how to grill meat effectively and some recipes and marinades or whatever it may be. They also include this pamphlet with their packages when you buy them. If you were to buy Omaha Steaks. So their goal really is to let their customers know that they're not just a place to buy meat, that they're really meat experts, right? That you know, that you're getting more than just, you know, a box full of meats when you buy from them, that you're getting, you know, all of this expertise that they have. You know, so those are a couple examples from print. Brett from Florida. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, just to pause here, I've seen those recipes from Omaha Steaks, and they're good. They kind of know what they're doing.
Right. I mean, and that's their goal, right,
is to
make you feel like, you know, it's more than just some, you know, some half-baked operation that, you know, that's sending out meat in a box, right, that they're experts, they know what they're doing, and that you can have some confidence as a consumer and some affinity towards them as a brand.
Positively. And I can remember the Omaha Steaks brand growing up as a kid. My mother was a realtor, and one of her clients would send every Christmas a box to our home of Omaha Steaks. So the brand goes back, I don't know, 40 years or something. I mean, what an incredible brand. We have another question from another one of our program participants today, who says, please give an example of native advertising in print magazine. So could you give us one of those?
Yeah, I mean, The New Yorker recently ran an article written by an engineer from IBM about five steps to building a better cloud, you know, in terms of cloud computing. You know, there's a little sponsored content label on the top of it, but you know, it's an article which, you know, if you're into cloud computing, you know, was an interesting story. It was paid for by IBM, and you know, and ran as though it was a regular New Yorker story. There's lots of examples of how print ads, you know, how print publications have tried to integrate this approach and you know, basically give you know, use native advertising as a, you know, as a form of content. You know, in thinking about this teleseminar, you know, looking at some of the examples that that media companies give of how they started to get into this. I mean, one way to start is to ask yourself, you know, who are the business people or advertisers that you have who are experts in their field, you know, who have information to share. You know, you all have a group of advertisers who, you know, who are in this advertising community, whether it's geographic or focused on a specific business or industry, if you're B2B, or, you know, focused on a, you know, a specific niche, if you're, you know, something like a real estate magazine. But you all have a group of advertisers who probably know an enormous amount about their field. And, you know, is there a way for them to share information that would be valuable to your readers and also valuable for them to share, you know, because it doesn't work if they don't want to pay for it. So, you know, that's sort of the first place to start. And, you know, in the case of the IBM guy, you know, he's an expert in cloud computing, so he can make it fly. the, you know, they're, you know, thinking of other, you know, other possible examples. You know, are there, you know, is there a local florist that can write a story that's, you know, maybe better than what Pro Flowers can write, you know, about taking care of plants or taking care of flowers. You know, is there, you know, something as generic as, you know, a plumber that can write about, you know, how to, you know, how to maintain your pipes, or, you know, best practices for, you know, making sure that your sinks don't leak. You know, all of these things are sort of little pieces of information that these industry experts, you know, would have and may have insight into more than anyone else. You know, and may also it may also be valuable enough to share that that they would be that they'd be willing to, you know, to pay to share it. That's sort of the general premise.
And if I can just insert, I saw a post on LinkedIn yesterday from Dr. Phil Davidson, who wrote about, he's an orthopedic surgeon, and he was writing about, hey, everyone, getting ready for winter season, what are you doing? Here are recommendations. Here are things that I'd like to suggest you do that will, you know, give you, you know, more health, more preventative ways to stay out in front. Oh, by the way, of course, I am an orthopedic surgeon, and if you have any, you know, if you'd like or need any kind of evaluation, please let me know. But all he was doing was sharing what he knows about sort of, you know, pre-winter prep. So another one of those examples that I literally saw yesterday. And Jed, this piece about sort of having a plan in terms of how to distribute the content. And again, so all of you know, we're talking about the side of the house right now. If you were to introduce any kind of content marketing, any kind of sponsored ads or native advertising, this is where we're going down. We're going to wrap up before the top of the hour here and talk about the cons on the other side so we all understand what's at risk and what's on the table so that we make certain we give you kind of a balanced perspective on both sides, okay? So Jed, tell us a little bit about a plan to distribute the content.
Well, you know, there's, you know, many publications today have, you know, sort of an enormous arsenal, you know, whether it's, you know, their print edition, their digital newsletter, their website, you know, it could be Twitter accounts, it could be Facebook pages, it can be LinkedIn pages. I mean, it's, you know, it becomes, you know, all of this distribution becomes valuable to an advertiser. And what many publications have done is by distributing an article written by someone, which is, you know, which is sort of another way of advertising themselves, they can kind of get away with using these mediums without bothering their readers feeling like they're really intruding on them. So it becomes a way, the sky's the limit, you know, on sort of the different channels that are available to you, it's really something that, you know, there's really no single answer to. You know, different publications, you know, some publications are doing everything. Other publications like Forbes have really contained content marketing, native advertising to this particular portion of their website. Other places like the Washington Post and the New York Times, you know, have done it, you know, are doing it in print and through e-newsletters and through daily updates, sort of, you know, headline news stories and on their website. You know, so it's really a matter of finding the right balance, and it probably depends to some extent on the specific article that we're talking about. You know, how relevant you think it's going to be to all of your readers.
Mm-hmm. And if you always come from the side of education, enhancing the quality of the work that you're doing inside of your publication, your newsletter, your website, if you always think about it, you know, WIFM, right? WIFM stands for what's in it for me? What's in it for me, the reader? The more compelling the reader, the more compelling the read, the more compelling the connection with the advertisers on the other side. Jed, I share with you, you know, Outside Magazine, I call that dessert reading, my Wired magazine, Fast Company, Inc. I rattle in and out of my way play with my tennis magazine. You know my passion for that. Skiing. I mean, every page, and I turn it and go back, and then I turn it and go back. I mean, that's what you, each of you want. You want that stickiness, that you're such value. And then when I get the e-newsletter or I'm at their website, it continues the experience. So WIFM is always, what's in it for me? And then we go to the other side, and that's our USP. What is our unique selling proposal to the readers? And by the way, if we do that really well, then we do a really great job of serving the advertiser. So, you know, it's a little, Jed, as we know, kind of the chicken and the egg. You know, you say tomato, I say tomato. Somewhere we got to find that middle ground between the readers and the advertisers. It's got to be valuable content, yes?
Right, absolutely. You know, and I think it's really at its best sort of in the example you gave where, you know, if you're reading something that's written by an orthopedic surgeon, you know, in that particular case, you know, those pieces of information really probably mean the most coming from an orthopedic surgeon. You know, if you're reading an article in Outside Magazine, you know, about hiking boots, and it's by the, you know, one of the designers of hiking boots for, you know, for whatever, for Patagonia, right, you're probably not going to say to yourself, well, they're just trying to get me to buy Patagonia hiking boots, right? You're probably going to say to yourself, well, this guy really knows what he's talking about. So I think those are sort of the best examples. There's lots of examples of bad content marketing, and I'll give you sort of the famous quick one. The Atlantic magazine ran a huge article on, you know, written by a member of the Scientologist Church, and you know, sort of proclaiming how wonderful Scientology was and how many good things the church was doing. You know, they got an enormous amount of heat for that because it really wasn't relevant at all to the readers, and it was sort of flying in the face a lot of the news that was coming out at that time about the church. So it was something that, you know, that they paid a pretty heavy price for, you know, in that their readers didn't read that and say to themselves, oh, this is interesting. Look what Atlantic Magazine is bringing me, right? Their readers looked at that and said, what the heck is this? It's completely out of context, and it's not information which I'm interested in. Maybe it was the wrong magazine for Scientology, you know, for Scientologists to do that in. Maybe it was, you know, the way that the article was written and what it was talking about. But for whatever reason, it didn't hit the chord they were hoping for.
So let's go down, if we could. I know we have a couple of questions here that we want to weave in. Rick in Kansas says, how do you suggest we price native advertising? Let's talk a little bit about the pricing side of the house, if we could.
Right. So I've done some research on this, and just from my own experience, and there's really the publications are all over the map. No publication seems to give a discount for native advertising. However, you know, some appear to give what amounts to a price break for distribution in other channels. For example, if you pay to run the paid content in print, they'll throw in, you know, an e-newsletter link, or they'll throw in a website page, that type of thing. Donna from Missouri, along these same lines, asked if there was a premium being charged to advertisers who are doing native ads. You know, the short answer is no, although there does appear to be sort of the same type of attitude that you might have towards political advertising, where you don't want the competitor, or in the case of political advertising, the other guy, you know, the guy he's running against, you know, to get wind of some sort of sweetheart deal that was given for the ad space. So I think that if a premium exists, it's just it's really the cost of getting the content prepared, which ends up being hard because you've got to have content which is compelling to read, and I think that's really where the majority of the cost lies.
Yeah, and if I can just also add a piece to that just in response, Donna. We just finished this last week, Jed, in our Tuesday Academy. What was the topic? Selling with scarcity. When you sell with scarcity, you can sell faster. You sell more ads. And you sell them at a premium, right? So scarcity means you may define, you know, within your advertising team that there might only be 4 native advertising campaigns going on in any given month. Well, guess what that means? You could have 400 advertisers fighting for 4 spots. Or for those of you that sell front covers, for some of you that are part of this, how many covers do you have this year? 12, that's it. You might sell 2 years in advance, or page 2, or inside back, or, you know, on your e-newsletter, or even on your website, where you might say, God, we have an infinite number. That's not true. If you don't if you only rotate 4 advertisers through your home page, not 24, guess what just happened there? Creation of scarcity. So there's a whole body of work, but how you position it, how you price it, how you deploy that, that's the magic. Selling with scarcity, Jed, can actually create a very interesting buying opportunity here.
Right, right. We only have a couple minutes left, so maybe we should talk about some of the, you know, and it's probably pretty obvious to most of the people on the phone, but some of the pros and cons of doing this. You know, the biggest con is sort of what we alluded to in the beginning, and that is what the Wall Street Journal, editor sort of framed as, you know, advertisers feeling manipulated, and as a result, feeling, you know, losing trust in the publication, and obviously that's a huge issue. The American Society of Magazine Editors just last week came out with new guidelines for editors and publishers. You know, they're online if you want to look at them, but essentially they said that, you know, any sort of paid content or native ads should have a, you know, a different font type and a different font size than editorial. You know, marketing associations came out, you know, immediately following that, saying that that's ridiculous, that in fact it should be exactly the same as what appears in print or online. So, you know, it's the argument rages. You know, but it's the kind of thing, I think, to keep in mind, that if not done right, and if not done in a responsible way, can really change how some readers feel about your publication, which is a shame, because you don't want the years of goodwill and trust to be thrown out the window for what amounts to a relatively small purchase.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and that's what's so important about this. We want all of you to recognize that this is a slippery slope if we don't really call out and make a distinction, the distinction between native advertising and ads versus editorial. But for those of you that have editorial, we realize that we have those of you that are free subscription, controlled circ, paid circ, newspaper, magazine, niche and niche publications. We realize that some of you are pure ad based, more like a shopper or auto trader or real estate or 50 plus sort of guides. And then we have others that, you know, with the editorial component. So each of you and all of you have to take today and sort of slot this into, so what do I understand about native advertising? How does it work or not work? Well, how do I communicate and talk to advertisers about it? Maybe we're not doing it in print, but maybe we are by e-newsletter. Maybe we're doing an e-newsletter plus web. And think about how all of those pieces come together, because advertisers are expecting that you're doing each of those pieces, that you're bringing them a total package, a full bundle. Even though, as we said during the course of our meeting here today and our discussion today that we've talked about, the fact is the power of print is competitive. Telling as ever. And if you go back and listen to the presentations that Jed has given to all of us over the past 6 and 12 months, you'll be sitting at the edge of your seat, as I do and as I have. And if you need any help finding those, just pop me a quick email, and I'll be more than happy to point you to those. It's unbelievably powerful. When we see the headlines, "Is print dead?" It's the furthest thing from the truth. And the fact is that media bids work, and the work they do with advertisers is focused and is successful on the print side. And when you listen to the case studies of the other examples that they've done that have been non-print, it's sort of more than a belly flop, quite honestly. Jed, we have covered so much ground here. Is there anything you'd like to share in closing about native advertising before we pause and say thank you to all the wonderful participants joining us here today?
Yeah, we want to thank everyone. Thank Ernest for at least attempting to keep me on track. I think the one thing to take away from this is that, you know, I think that there's clearly native advertising is a way for some advertisers to break through the clutter, to reach consumers with a compelling message and a message that really means something to them. On the flip side, you know, it's something that publications honestly are still grappling with and trying to come up with the right balance of how to present it and to capitalize on it without losing losing what their readers expect from them.
Positively. And Jed, thank you for your kind words and always for the support from you and your team. It's been a pleasure going all the way back to 2005, 2006, more than, 70 hours of programs that we have lit up. To the moon and back we go. It's always a pleasure. And to you and your team, thank you for all the support and the educational opportunity that we can go out and share with those that are in advertising sales with the goals of giving you tools and resources and knowledge that will help you win. To those of you that would like to help, like some help deploying these strategies, come into our Power Hour site, powerhour.com. We have a fabulous academy every Tuesday. It's open mic, meaning you can hear my voice like you hear, and you can hear like Jed, and when Jed and I are talking back and forth. That's what we mean by open mic. It's live. It's focused each week on a particular topic, and you'll absolutely love it. So, Jed, thank you. Always a pleasure, and we'll be back next month with a fantastic topic that will wrap up this year and go into next year. It's always a pleasure working here together. So thank you so much, and to all of you, go forth, and we hope that you will deploy the things that we've talked about, and we hope you will carry the knowledge now into your day and into your week and amongst your advertisers. So, Jed, thanks so much.
Thanks very much, Ernest. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Bye.
Take care.